Hello and welcome to Send Parenting Balance. My name is Katie Walker and I talk all things parenting children with autism, ADHD, PDA, and any other associated mental health difficulties. Today's podcast is all about low self-esteem issues, low confidence, and body image within our children with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA. This podcast is in response to a request I had on my TikTok page. So let's open this box. Children with autism, ADHD, PDA, and anxiety, and low self-esteem, confidence issues, and body image is a huge topic. There's a few aspects that come to mind when we look at self-esteem and confidence. So let's dig straight in and open this box. Initially, dependent on age, every child, regardless of disability, will go through phases of their life with lower self-esteem and confidence at some times. This is an unfortunate part of life. The school environment of today means constant educational attainment reminders, comparisons, and pressures, which means that even children top of their class can be made to feel that they're not doing enough or not achieving enough. School pressures surrounding education are much more than they ever used to be. And I believe this is contributing to the sheer quantity of mental health issues that children are displaying from a very early age. There is also personality traits linked to self-esteem and confidence. Some children that have low confidence, or maybe shy, or perhaps even have low self-esteem, can grow up to be the same way as adults because we all have different personality traits. As we grow older, we tend to become more knowledgeable through experience and a whole lot of error, may I add, of how to manage it before we can start putting in our own interventions to help. Aside from these main aspects, there are obviously difficulties also linked with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA that can increase self-esteem and confidence issues within children. Autism is a spectrum, and so we need to recognise that not only is autism, ADHD, PDA, and other associated mental health difficulties vary between children, but feelings of self-confidence, self-worth, and self-belief will too vary between individuals. So let's try and break these down. Firstly, children with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA can sense energy within the room. They can be experts and hypersensitive to body language, tone of voice, and body behaviours in general. This is part of having sensory processing disorder. Now, this in turn can mean that a child is always walking on eggshells in new environments, and particularly a school environment with lots of people, staff, and friends. In every new social setting, whether it be a classroom, now, if this is secondary school, this means it's a new class every hour, remember, or with a large group of friends. This means that the child needs to read the energy, the body language and tone of voices, facial expressions, etc., before being able to feel safe or confident. Now, this is why a lot of children with autism, ADHD, and/or PDA tend to find having one or two friends much easier, because this means that if it's more predictable, this can therefore make the child feel safer quicker. And of course, be much more confident and their more authentic selves. Because the constant reading and scanning of body language, tone of voice, and body behaviours is exhausting to a child with autism, PDA, and/or ADHD. A great example is a group of four friends at school. Perhaps one day they are calmly sitting chatting about their favourite hobbies, but the next day there may be what I call social dramas, someone telling a stressful or dramatic story of feeling upset, or perhaps something didn't work out as planned, or perhaps they are telling an excited story of something fantastic that's about to happen. All of which come with different body behaviours for a child with autism, ADHD, or PDA to read and respond to, and it's this process that's exhausting. The less people, the easier it is, and the less exhausting. Because of this hypersensitivity, you can imagine how much more children with neurospicy tendencies may compare to others. They may question their own input to these conversations. Did I respond in the right way? Did I say anything silly? Everyone else has white trainers on. I have blue ones on. I like my blue ones, but maybe I should ask mum for some white ones. I saw someone being bullied yesterday. I don't want that to happen to me. I heard it was because someone looked at someone else funny. Perhaps I need to think about how I look at people myself. Perhaps I shouldn't stare at people. If you are hypersensitive to your surroundings, you will most likely be hypersensitive to yourself and your own reactions, therefore showing as low self-esteem and confidence. This heightened arousal within social settings cannot be switched off. However, it can be quietened with learned strategies and interventions over time. Have you yourself ever been to counselling? I have been going for years and it helped me immensely. Once you learn the skills in counselling about seeing others' behaviours, you can't then switch off this skill. It's really difficult to do. And this is just one example of what the children are going through when they are dealing with that heightened arousal within social settings, which will, of course, increase their self-confidence or perhaps their low self-esteem. I have an adult friend with autism who will often message me screenshots of messages between her and another friend to regularly ask me whether her messages seem normal or do they seem too pushy or is she talking too much about herself? Her coping strategy as an adult is to seek help and advice from a trusted few people in her life, and I'm lucky enough to be one of them. Lucky me. People can learn strategies to help them interpret the world around them more positively. Imagine if you interpret the world around you in a hypersensitive way and can't switch that off, how hard it must be to react to your environment and feel confident that you got it right. With children, the people they look to tend to be their friends for advice, which is difficult because as adults, we know that the most unpredictable people in the world can also be children. And so, this process of asking friends for advice or comparing their own looks or abilities or personality traits with other children, their friends, can be a very tricky process. And very unpredictable for somebody with autism, ADHD, or PDA to properly understand. For some children with PDA, they strive for perfectionism. The expectation they set on themselves has to be completely perfect. The drawing must be perfect, or else what is the point? In these cases, you may find that a child's self-esteem is low due to not having the skills yet to achieve their own set expectations of what perfect looks like. For example, my 7-year-old will often colour, and yet if he colours out of the lines, he will rip up his drawing and throw it away, even if the colouring was amazing and he had nearly finished, even if he'd been working on it for nearly an hour. This fuels a negative view of can do, a negative view of what he feels he's capable of, and therefore, his own self-esteem. Finally, for some children with autism and ADHD, the comparison of other people, such as a best friend, can have impacts on their own self-esteem. Autism and comparing often goes hand in hand, unfortunately. The comparison between other friends, siblings, environments, and social media can be unrealistic, and yet also their whole world. This in turn can affect self-esteem. This can be linked with their own self-identity. For many reasons, some of which we've discussed, finding their own self-identity and understanding who they are in comparison to others and their own environment is very difficult. For some children with autism and ADHD, they can be confident in their likes and dislikes, hobbies and interests with others because they are unaware of their surroundings and what is popular, and be confident and authentic enough to not take note to other people and continue with their own dreams and aspirations. But in these cases, this can sometimes fuel other children to being unkind. And this can, over time, dampen a child's self-esteem and confidence to be their own authentic selves. They may stay with their own likes and dislikes, but move away from others in fear of not being the same, and therefore socially isolate themselves. Or they can try and change the ways they are doing things so that they are liked. These children can become fearful in saying or doing the wrong thing, therefore putting their hand up in class or saying how it is they really feel, in fear that it isn't the same as everybody else. This is where masking can happen. Perhaps a child starts to change the way they speak, the interests they have, the way they dress, just to suit the environment they are in. Perhaps they start to gossip with others because that's what others do. The mask starts to appear, and it's exhausting for the child because it's hard work trying to be someone else. And it may be that in different settings, the child adopts different masks. And this, I can assure you, is even more exhausting. My daughter, aged 13, will adapt her whole world to suit whoever she is best friends with. She can only manage one or two friends, ideally seen separately, and she will become everything them. She can take it to the absolute extreme. So, for example, if her friend's mum cooks spaghetti bolognese for tea, then we here at home have to do it the same way. Emily will ask the friend's mum for the recipe, and if it's slightly different, then it's not good enough. Then we are somehow not good enough as a family in comparison to her friend and her friend's mum. If her friend gets a new coat, even if my daughter has just bought a new coat, then she won't wear her one until she gets the same one as her friend has. It makes clothes shopping very difficult because she will choose her favourites based on her social environment at the time. If you couple this with the ADHD difficulties of keeping friendships, then as you can imagine, this is a constant change that's difficult to manage. This can happen with teachers in a classroom. If a child with autism, ADHD, PDA has heard a teacher shout or be unnecessarily firm with a student, you may find that regardless of how well behaved and liked that your child is, he or she may never raise his or her hand due to fear of saying the wrong thing. This is linked to being hypersensitive to their environment. So, how can we, as parents and carers of children with autism, PDA, and/or ADHD, support somebody who has low self-esteem? Well, there are many things we can do to support, so let's have a look at some. From all the possible sources and reasons that we have listed, it's important to understand what is affecting your child's self-esteem and confidence in order to understand what we can do to fix it. This is where a one-size-fits-all approach is never going to work, particularly with children with ADHD, autism, and PDA. And this is why all of the support I offer, even on my courses available on my website, www.sendparentingbalance.com, are bespoke to you and your child. A simple Google search may give you ideas, but may not help the issue of the cause if it's not fully understood. You may find that it's all of the things I've mentioned above affecting a child's self-esteem. You may find that it's just some of them, or perhaps it's a completely different reason entirely. All of which require different interventions to fix them. Firstly, having an environment at home that is open and supportive of difference is incredibly powerful. I often talk about my own quirks, and we laugh about them together in a loving and kind way. We will point out each other's quirks because we accept difference. We understand autism and ADHD, and we can speak openly about the conditions. For examples, we will use phrases like, aha, that'll be that ADHD. How can I help? So we don't use the diagnosis as a label or as an excuse, nor do we let it hinder us. We speak of it in a way that encourages challenge and creativity to try and get it right. Praise is powerful too. Now, if you have a child with PDA, this may be difficult, and therefore you may have to do it from a distance. With my son, who does not like praise, I put all of his certificates on the fridge and all of those torn up drawings because of his own perfectionist expectations that he disliked. I take out of the trash, sellotape back together, and also put on my fridge. I don't say a word about them to his face. He knows where they are, as do I. He knows I'm praising him in my own non-direct way. I have a Harry wall, and it's all things Harry. To make it less cringe for him, I also put photos of days out of us on there too, so it can be a wall that he likes to look at because he likes to look at photos of himself. Having these happy photos on the wall encourages him to remember the happy and fun times for when he's also feeling low. I also do the bedtime three things I love in a non-direct way. I do it with my 13-year-old too. So at bedtime, in a non-direct way, when I'm kind of putting toys away or getting the PJs out ready for bed, I will often say three things that I loved about the day. I don't give any co eye contact, so it's not awkward, and I don't expect the children to join in or even respond. I just say things like, I loved your choice of t-shirt today. Orange really suits you. I just wanted to say thank you for popping your cup in the sink earlier today. That saved my legs from going upstairs again. I love the way you shared your chocolate buttons with your sister today. That must have been hard. I would have wanted to have eaten them all. This helps in bed that they are a nice person and they are valued, and it does help increase self-esteem. I've done it for so long now that they now say three things they love about me. Not all the time, but it's really interesting when they do do that. Encouragement is a fine line because it's a fine line between reading your child's tolerance to your input and then how much you can encourage, particularly if PDA is involved. I always place a little encouragement on attending social events. But I use a safety blanket approach and offer the fact that my daughter can text at any awkward social situation, and I can try and help her unpick it. This gives her the confidence to be able to attend social things, social events, going out with friends, but have that safety blanket of asking me to finish off conversations for her or to get herself any out of any awkwardness. I also encourage communication between the two of us by staying in her space, offering lots of opportunities to talk. I do this by texting throughout the day. Usually, I just text lots of emojis or checking in. Sometimes I will sit in her space on her bed with her, even with nothing to say. I'll just be in her space. Sometimes I'll take a coffee up and just sit in her room and drink my coffee. Sometimes I will use social situations I've had myself that I found awkward or I've said the wrong thing to start a conversation going and treat it like a social story, but it's actually something that's happened to me. I will encourage to try new things, but I don't force. I don't bribe. If she doesn't want to, I don't show disappointment. I tend to move with her at her own pace. If she never gets there, then acceptance is needed. If she does get there, then amazing. In both scenarios, as her parent, I know that I've put in all of the interventions and understanding possible to help. Focusing on their strengths and talents, including special interests, can be really helpful in building self-esteem and genuinely sharing an interest with them, encouraging them along the way. My daughter loves to sing, and I've told her that one day, she should be a songwriter and we should publish her songs. Social stories for younger children can also work really well for improving self-esteem and self-confidence. Modeling confidence, a can-do attitude, and sharing whoops moments with your child can help them understand that getting it wrong is okay. It's something that can be talked about without shame and with a smile. If we want children to have high self-esteem and confidence in trying new things and speaking their mind, then we need to ensure that we're not disciplining them when they're making wrong choices. To find their voice and who they are is a journey, not to be controlled by the adult, but to be supported. Journaling for older children is a really good form of trying to understand our emotions and increasing self-esteem, self-worth, and self-confidence. Guided journaling with daily affirmations such as, I am brave, I am kind, such as, list three things I did to make someone else happy today, are really good ways to connect with a child to help them learn more about their own emotions and the impact that they have on other people. Building a sense of belonging can hugely affect self-esteem, and this can be done by attending a group, whether that be an individual hobby like horse riding or animal care, or a group setting like a home education socialisation group or an after-school activity can be really helpful in creating a sense of belonging for your child. If your child is not eager to leave the house, could you start your very own cake making or Lego building club, starting with just you and your child? And then, is there a friend you could invite to join and see it grow at your child's pace? It may be that the parent alone is enough to start a group off with, and it can still create a sense of belonging when coupled with a special interest of hobby. If your child is into fashion design, can you be their biggest supporter and allow them to design outfits for a teddy, for example, and sell them online? If your child is great at writing stories, could you be their biggest supporter and print off their story into a book so that they can see the finished article? If your child loves photography, could you put together a photo calendar and give it as Christmas gifts? If a child is into cooking, can you take baked cakes to the local homeless shelter or Macmillan Cake Morning? If your child is into drama, can they join the local drama class and perhaps set up a social media acting page, depending on the age of the child, of course? If your child loves singing, can they write their own songs and could you record them and send them to family members? If they are great at building Lego, can you build a Lego village, take lots of pictures, and send them into school? Are they great at art? Can you ask them to design and paint all of the cups in your house because you love their creativity and want to show it off? How can you encourage and be their biggest supporter alongside their special interests? These special interests can provide the biggest tool in building their self-esteem and feeling a sense of achievement. Having a friend can really help feelings of self-esteem and self-worth. How can you help with a friendship? With my children, a friendship has been heavily facilitated by patient parents who understand neurodiversity so that any clashes or difficulties can be sorted rather than causing too much stress between adults. Friendships are always encouraged, and I prioritise friendships as much as possible. When building self-esteem in education, I will often ask staff at school to make the work too easy on occasion. I want them to allow my child a chance to accomplish and feel proud and safe in knowing that they know. This can feel really good. This can build self-esteem and confidence. Pushing and challenging children all the time is not helpful on self-confidence, particularly if your child has autism, ADHD, and/or PDA. So bringing that level of work down just in times of needs can have huge impacts in a very positive way. Interestingly, and I appreciate that home education does not suit everybody, but when I started home educating my daughter, she developed her self-esteem, her self-confidence, and amazing self-belief. Why? Because everything is stage, not age. Classes are mixed ages, based on ability, which meant that she could be in a lower class in which she could achieve in and be with older and younger children. The comparison, therefore, against children her own age fell away. She soon realized that age is not important, and yet stage is. Home-educated children are authentically themselves in a way that they don't need to mask to fit into mainstream education. They are no longer needing to be worried about the Nike coat or the Air Max trainers. And so, because that pressure has gone, children wear what they want, and everybody starts to respect each other's diversity and style. It really is incredible. Home-educated children also heavily focus on their own special interests. So even if just attending a class, it is celebrated just by attending, just by trying. Everything is celebrated. And so these children's cups are being poured into all day long with praise and encouragement so that they cannot wait to return. Also, within home education classes, and finally, they are free to be themselves. If they want to eat sweets while learning, they can. If they want to sit alone, they can. If they want to move their table to sit with a friend, they can. If they need the toilet, they just go. If they have an idea, that it's always celebrated by the whole class and staff. No answer is ever a wrong answer. And because of this environment, children very quickly feel safe in their own voice and body behaviours without the need to compare against others. Here are just a few changes that home-educated children can experience, but unfortunately would be difficult to mimic in a mainstream environment. So moving on now to thinking about body image. All teenagers, neurotypical or neurodiverse, can have a pretty tough time with body image, whether they are neurospicy or not. That young romantic view of the world, filters, perfectionism, expectations, and social media does not help with body image. Neurospicy children can have all of this and a few extra layers, such as hyperfocusing, comparisons, misunderstandings of the world that they're in, and their own self-confidence too. Watching ourselves as adults is really important. What are we mirroring to our children? As adults, it can be acceptable to always be on a diet, or to be calorie counting, or to be talking about menopause or weight gain with our friends over the phone. But actually, what's happening is there are younger ears that are listening. So if we as adults are hyper-focusing on our own health goals, then this can be seen by the child. So asking ourselves, how do we treat ourselves, and then mirroring that. Let's hope that it's positive, because that will really help. I always think taking the focus off of calories in foods, the times that we eat, and the places that we eat is a really easy way to start having a healthy attachment to food, and therefore body image. As parents, we can become very anxious if our child isn't eating properly or at the right times or the wrong types of foods. That the child can feel this anxiety, see it, and then it can become more of a demand. So if there's a PDA profile, then this may indeed fuel the child in pushing back more against you if it feels like it's a demand on them. Whereas if you become really relaxed around food, then the child will be really relaxed around food. Unless, of course, ARFID is concerned, then this is something entirely different. ARFID is avoidance and restrictive food intake disorder, and that is a separate podcast. Lots of compliments will help. Make it your everyday mission. I love that top on you. I love it when you smile. Your eyes smile too. It's so lovely. Your hair smells amazing. What conditioner did you use? You were so kind yesterday. Thank you for your help. Remember, compliment not only on appearance but personality too. And this in turn will help with the child's own image of themselves, their body confidence, but also their self-esteem. It may feel a bit overkill if you're not used to communicating in this way, but keep trying, keep going. Use phrases such as, "We weren't made to fit clothes, clothes were made to fit us." I quite often use phrases like this around the house. Putting up photos of times where your child was feeling really great and happy about themselves so that your child remembers the feelings they had in that time. It doesn't matter what body type your child has, those things still happened and they were amazing and they felt great. So reminding the child of those times and maybe having photos on the fridge or in the lounge is a great way to remember those amazing feelings, regardless of our body size. Perhaps taking your child shopping to buy new clothes to see what they feel great in. I love a Primark shop. Go along and try lots of things on. Perhaps your child's body shape is changing. Perhaps their style is changing. Perhaps they just need to find their own new version of themselves within a new style. Your child possibly sees hundreds of social media posts every single day. And if they have TikTok, I'm going to change that number to possibly thousands. Then on top of that, there is the filters. So we are really up against it as parents. Implementing just a few of these things into our everyday can really help to increase self-esteem, self-confidence, and body image. Having open conversations with your child about the reality is also a really good idea. That is the reality of social media. There's some really great content out there that say things like, I've had my lips done, I've had Botox here and here. And it just really points out that that person, it's not natural, they've had work done. Quite often, you can see pictures on Google or social media of celebrities looking like their normal selves in photos where they're not all done up. Sometimes in TikTok, I've saved some videos for my own daughter where people start their videos with a filter and then they take it off halfway through, showing the child the real them. And it's a good idea to have these conversations and show our children these pictures and these images and these videos so that they understand that social media is not reality. It's not something to strive for because it's not real. I really do hope that some of these tips have helped open that box to self-esteem, body image, and self-confidence, where it may have come from, how our children may be approaching their environments and their social circles, and how this may affect these things. As always, please do reach out to me at www.sendparentingbalance.com should you have any further questions on these very complex issues that we open up here at Send Parenting Balance podcast. I do hope that you are kind to yourself today, and I look forward to seeing you next time. Take care.